This is the Lou Rockwell Show.
We're so glad to have Dr. Tom Woods back again. The late Murray Rothbard, the great economist, historian, political philosopher, who's the touchstone of LouRockwell.com, always wished that there could be historians who understood economics, because he thought that history was, of course, an extremely important discipline, both from a scholarly standpoint and from the standpoint of the libertarian movement and achieving any gains for liberty, but that most historians not only knew no economics, were sort of invincibly ignorant of economics. So I know that he was very, very glad to meet a young Tom Woods, who was an undergraduate at that time. And already a historian who understood economics, Tom got his PhD in history from Columbia University, and he's senior fellow in American history at the Mises Institute, author of 8 books. And I want to talk to him today about his Politically Incorrect Guide to American History, which was on the New York Times bestseller list for a very long time. You'll have to tell me how many weeks, Tom. Not long enough, of course. And I think this is such a wonderful book. It's useful to intelligent homeschoolers, to adults, college students, high school students, everybody in between. And I think not only is it beautifully written like everything done by Tom Woods, not only is it politically incorrect, as the title tells you, by addressing the things that normal historians don't want addressed, and certainly addressing them from a standpoint of human freedom, which they also don't want addressed, but because of his understanding of economics, and even though Tom doesn't have a degree in economics, he is an economist as well as an historian. That's what makes this such a great book, and it continues to sell well, I hope, Tom, but remind me of how many weeks it was on the New York Times bestseller list.
It was 12.
Hey, well, okay. Well,
sure.
Well, tell us, I mean, I know you were assigned to write the book, but why do you think this is an important work? Because I think it's a very important work.
Well, I appreciate that, Lou. First, the book is roughly 80,000 words in length, which was a requirement imposed on me. So that limits how much you can get to. So I took those 80,000 words and just stuffed everything I could possibly fit in there on a variety of subjects. And the subjects I chose, I mean, it is a narrative from the beginning to about the year 2000, it pretty much goes up to. But with 80,000 words, you have to be selective about what you can cover. And so I tried to cover the sorts of things that are either really distorted or just left out of the usual narrative. And I think what's useful about the book is a couple of things. The first is that it really is a kind of a libertarian and anti-war overview of American history. I mean, there's no war that's cheered in this book. I mean, the American Revolution is implicitly cheered, but otherwise, the book is one long work of skepticism toward the federal government. And it's funny that, you know, if you would look at, which I don't recommend reading Amazon reviews, but if you were to do that from years ago when it first came out, you had people on the left who hadn't read it who said that this was a jingoistic work, you know, because they just read Politically Incorrect, so they assume it means, you know, let's go invade Iraq or something. And, well, where's the jingoism? I mean, you don't support any war. You expose the propaganda that leads to the wars. And then you had the right wing who was saying, you know, this book makes me proud to be an American. Well, I'm not quite sure that's having the desired effect either. I mean, the whole thing is a denunciation of the federal government. So people, I don't know, it's like one of those personality tests with a big ink blot. You know, they see what they expect to see. But so I think it's useful in that sort of perspective of being anti-war and skeptical of government and giving, you know, always giving liberty more than the benefit of the doubt is it's a rare perspective. And, you know, I remember when I was in high school, I left high school, even though I had a high school teacher who described himself as a conservative, I left high school thinking, well, you know, how could you possibly favor any kind of deregulation or lower taxes or spending? I mean, you know, this institution, the federal government, is absolutely indispensable, you know, to all the progress we've had in all these areas, you know, and that was the impression you got. And what other impression could you get reading a textbook? So this is, I hope, a refreshing alternative. But the second thing that I think is useful about it is the recommended reading list, the bibliography, but specifically strewn throughout the text are little boxes in which are contained what I call a book you're not supposed to read. So if there's some subcategory in the book that you're interested in, but you feel helpless to navigate the huge amount of literature on all these subjects, I try and recommend what I consider to be good, accessible, and reliable coverages of these subjects. And in fact, that's really how the whole book is laid out. It's laid out kind of similarly to the Dummies books or the you know, Idiot's Guide sort of books, where you've got little boxes with quotations or book recommendations or little charts and things that are funny and interesting strewn throughout, so as to make the book readable and accessible, basically.
Tom, two of my favorite parts of the book are about two of my least favorite people in all of history, Woodrow Wilson and Franklin Roosevelt. You want to talk a little bit about how you treat these two godlike figures in American history, the New Deal, and of course what Wilson did economically in running his war in terms of proto-New Deal?
Oh, sure, sure. Well, Woodrow Wilson, in terms of, for example, some of his violations of civil liberties, is a subject that Kevin Gutzman and I cover in our book, Who Killed the Constitution? But on everything else on Woodrow Wilson, I cover it in the Politically Incorrect Guide. He basically ran a kind of a command economy. And this is one of the reasons, interestingly enough, that people who might call themselves modern-style liberals were so enthusiastic about the war. I mean, yes, they wanted to beat the Germans, but if you read the New Republic magazine in those days, a lot of them are very enthusiastic. This is a point that Murray Rothbard was very fond of making. They were very enthusiastic about the war because of the opportunity it presented to run a planned economy, because you would have to centralize resources and have the complete economic mobilization of the country in order to win the war. And this was a great opportunity to, once and for all, to bury the private economy and substitute it with some kind of central planning. And they hoped that this type of central planning would carry over into the post-war period. And in fact, and of course, most of the chapter deals with all the lies and distortions and double standards involved in getting the country into World War I. But I show that although in the 20s there was a lot of retrenchment of government power, it still never went back to its pre-war levels, as Bob Higgs would always point out. But that when the 1930s came along and Franklin Roosevelt wanted his New Deal programs instituted, he often appealed to the World War I example, you know, and the slogan was, "We planned in war, now we shall plan in peace." And they resurrected a lot of the same government agencies and just adapted them to peacetime purposes. In fact, sometimes the very same people who staffed these agencies in 1918 were staffing them once again in 1933. So there's always this sort of war metaphor in American history, too. You know, we've got to wage war, foreign war. We have to wage war on depression. We have to wage war on poverty. We have to have Jimmy Carter said that the energy crisis should be the moral equivalent of war, which people pointed out unfortunately spells out meow. It's kind of unfortunate, but there's always this ideological mobilization of the population to get them into some kind of a warlike frenzy. And so the chapter on FDR goes through the economic consequences of what he did, goes through what he tried to do to the Supreme Court, and goes through a lot of the modern literature on this. We've started to see scholarly articles in recent years pointing out that maybe the Depression went on as long as it did, not in spite of Franklin Roosevelt, but perhaps because of what he's been doing. And this has taken to be a great discovery of the past 10 years, when in fact people in our tradition have been trying to make this argument for decades. It's finally starting to get a hearing, and the purpose of my book is to take studies like that and popularize them so that the average person can get a quick overview of all these controversial episodes.
Tom, I just want to tell everybody, this is a great book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to American History. It shows you that the people who are proclaimed as villains are often heroes. The people who are proclaimed as heroes are definitely villains. And it's got a great bibliography, many, many great suggestions for further reading. And if you'd like to get a copy, you can look on lewrockwell.com and any of Tom's articles in his archive, Thomas E. Woods Jr. Archives. And the book is listed there, and you can just click on it and get it through Amazon. Tom, thanks so much for being with us again, and great to have you.
Always a pleasure, Lou. Thank you.
You've been listening to The Lou Rockwell Show. Produced by lewrockwell.com, the best-read libertarian website in the world. If you'd like to advertise on this podcast or on the website, email advertise@lewrockwell.com. And thanks for listening.